When we talked to you last time, you had your first novel published. What's happened since then?
Wow. I've lost track of time, actually. The Informationist was published in March 2011. So we're about a year and a half out from that. And it feels like 5 years have passed. There's just been so much crammed into such a short space. Shortly following the publication of The Informationist came the second book, The Innocent, in the end of 2011, which is actually coming out in paperback just next week, August 28th. So if anybody wants to grab it then, love that. In those two books came out back to back, that meant two book tours. And that meant two publicity tours and trying to write a third book on top of that and attending writers' conferences and book fairs and all of that. And writing the third book and researching the third book and trying to prep for the fourth book and everything all crammed into the space of a year and a half. And it's just been insane.
Wow. I mean, that sounds like about three lives crammed into one for that period.
As I'm saying this, I'm sitting there going, oh my God, all of that happened in that small space of time. I mean, no wonder I've wondered where all the time went. It's been quite jam-packed. Things are starting to slow down a bit now. But now that I'm back under contract, I have the third book will be coming out next year in May or June. I'm not sure of the exact date yet. And then I'm under contract for the fourth. And in order to keep that same publication schedule of coming out one a year right around May, June, I have a very, very short time frame to write this fourth book. And so I'm like under a lot of pressure right now.
Well, thanks for taking a few minutes to talk to our listeners. Tell our listeners in as briefly as you can about what these books are. They're adventure books. They're purely fiction. But they do have a connection to your life, I think.
Definitely the first two do. The start off, the book of The Informationist, introduces our character, our fearless heroine, Vanessa Michael Monroe, who is a missionary's child born in Central Africa and doesn't even really know the United States, doesn't get to the United States until she's almost 18 years old. And her life in Africa is what basically creates who she is. She's a hunter of information. She's also something of a chameleon and a predator due to events that happened to her before she flees Africa. And the Informationist was partially, I guess you could say, attached to my life because I lived in Africa, and my whole reason for wanting to write it in the first place was to be able to write about Africa. And part of my life that many listeners do know about and many don't is that I was born and raised in a religious cult, an apocalyptic cult that did not believe in education beyond sixth grade and was very isolated from the world. We did get out and mingle sometimes as a way to raise money or to get the things that we needed, but we weren't allowed to just freely socialize. We didn't go to public school. I did very sporadically, which is where my sixth grade education came from. But it was very insular, and we believed that the world was going to end at any given time, and clearly it didn't. And I was able to get out when I was in my 20s, and I already had two children, and that's sort of what – that was the background that led me into writing is – it's complicated, but that's what got me into writing.
But it lends an I've read your first book. I haven't read the second book yet, but it does lend a lot of authenticity to the adventures of Michael, your character.
I believe it does, and especially in the case of the second book, The Innocent, the one that's coming out on the 28th, people ask me so often, well, what was it like being raised in a cult? Can you just tell me a little bit? And frankly, no, I can't just tell you a little bit because there's no little bit to it. I mean, how do you put 25 years into a little capsule and say, here's a little soundbite for you? So The Innocent was basically my answer to that question of what was it like being raised in a cult? And The Innocent is very much based on truth. People like to say that, you know, people who don't know me and who read The Informationist and know a little bit about my background, they assume that The Informationist is partly autobiographical. And it's not. It's not at all. The only part of that story, which is somewhat biographical, is that it takes place in Africa. So I'm writing about a location where I actually really have been there. I know what it's like. I am familiar with the cultures and so on and so forth. And they assume that that was me, and it wasn't at all. But The Innocent, on the other hand, even though it's not my story per se, it is the story of what it was like growing up in the cult. And I everything in that book pretty much is true. It's all thrillerized and fictionalized, but it's true. It's based on truth. I've taken things that really happened in real life, changed them slightly in order to make them work with the story. But it's true. And so it doesn't have the same, I guess you could say, edge of the knife, slit your throat sort of feeling to it as The Informationist does. But it is a lot more psychological, and it goes into, I take you into the cult and say, you want to know what it was like? Here you go. Have at it.
Wow. Over the last several months, or at least since I've been on your email list, you put out emails to your listeners, and I'm really interested in your telling us about the process of how an author maintains readers, not listeners, excuse me, readers, and how an author builds and connects with them. Just tell me about that process. This is different than it was a few years ago.
Very different. I guess it was, I don't even know how long I've been doing it. I guess maybe 4 or 5 months or so. I've had an email list where I send out to anybody who wants to accompany me on this journey. And it's been quite a wild ride. And I don't blog. And the reason I don't blog is because I feel like it's shouting out into the ether. And somebody may or may not hear you. And I much prefer a personal connection with people. I really do see my readers and my fans as my confidence, my social group, for lack of a better word. And I love the interaction that I have with them. And I just felt that emailing them would be a better way to communicate. And I've always been the type of person that I process what I'm going through writing. My own experiences are clarified to me through the process of writing. And I guess somewhat like my character, I'm very good at absorbing information and then finding a way to distill that and regurgitate it in a easy to understand way. And I feel that there are so many people who have questions about publishing, and it's like this wall, and you can't get past that wall, but the people on the other side aren't always necessarily talking about what it's like. And, I mean, a lot of writers do write about the publishing industry, and even more of them write about the process of writing itself. But I don't, because I'm self-educated, I don't feel that I'm the best or most qualified person to speak about actual writing. I mean, I'm winging it. I'm figuring it out as I go, and I've got copy editors and editors cleaning up my mess along the way. It makes it look a whole lot prettier than it is. But what I really do understand is the business of writing. And I'm able to explain it piece by piece, chunk by chunk, in emails as questions arise or as I discover something else. And I'm happy to be able to let people in on this kind of vague, hey, what actually goes on behind that wall sort of subject.
I have just happened to print out some of your emails, so I can ask you about them.
Okay.
This was one topic. How do you find a publisher?
Well,
and you're saying, you know,
you don't. For the most part, you don't. Agents find publishers. And that's what that email was all about, is how a book actually gets into the hand of a publisher.
How does it get into the hands of a publisher?
Mostly through an agent. Most publishers, especially the Big Six, which is like, you know, Random House, Simon Schuster, you know, the big names that everybody recognizes, and all their little guys underneath them, because it's very much corporate and, you know, they've assimilated. They're like the Borg. They've assimilated so many smaller publishing houses. So all of them, they really only accept agented manuscripts. So the agents then become the gatekeepers. So your number one job before you, as soon as you finish the book, even before you've completely finished it, you want to start researching, finding an agent. But after that, once you've finished, then comes the step of finding an agent. That people think writing the book is hard, and that no, writing the book was the easy part, and getting it published.
And you have to have a completed book for fiction.
Yes, for fiction, if you're planning to submit it to through an agent, unless you're a big name that they already recognize or you have a proven track record under your belt of having written before, if you're a debut author like I am, this is your first work being put out or your first full-size novel that's ever been printed, you have to have it completed before you actually start submitting.
How do you get the writing, the work, as you say, done?
I've
found that email very, very interesting.
You treat it like a job.
You say that you said it includes mornings where a person doesn't want to get out of bed. There are times when I want to use any excuse possible to avoid opening up the computer file that represents my current work in progress.
Yes.
Sounds like the rest of us.
This is so incredibly true. There are so many days when I just really would rather not work. Writing is easy. It's not in the sense you're not out there in a field, you know, digging rocks. So, you know, it's not manual labor. It's not brainless, but it's not easy in the sense that the mental effort that is required to actually put it together it's tedious and it's hard. And I don't want to do hard work. I'd rather just lay in bed. So, but the thing is that, and if I don't write, I'm not going to get paid. And the only way to really treat it the way it's supposed to be is to treat it like a job. And, you know, some people are like, well, that's easy for you to say because, you know, writing is what you do for a living. And, you know, I have a full-time job that I have to go to. So, you know, I don't have time and all of this. And, you know, I don't begrudge that, but I didn't always get paid to write. And, you know, when I was a full-time mom and I had two little kids that I had to look after, and as any parent knows, it's exhausting taking care of children. And, you know, I wrote in 5-minute gaps, but I wrote every day and I treated it like my part-time job, my second job. But for those who want to get published or who want to complete a book, you can't just, you know, treat it like something you're going to do when you have the time or when you have the inspiration. People who get published treat it like a job, and they're methodical and consistent, and they don't stop doing it just because the inspiration isn't there.
I met Joseph Heller back about 1970, and he talked about he had a magazine job, and he went home every night and devoted, I don't know how many hours it was. I don't know it was that much, but it may have been like 2 hours a night. That was strictly the time, and it took him more than 10 years, I think, to write Catch-22.
Yes, and, you know, there will be people who will say, well, I know, 2 hours, oh my God, what a luxury. I can't even imagine having 2 hours. And, you know, there's always an excuse. There's always a reason why you can't. Legitimate, logical reason, and nobody is going to begrudge you or say, oh, you're right, oh, you know, that's not true, it's easy, you should do it. You know, there are legitimate, logical reasons why people don't have the time to do what they want, whether it's writing or any other passion that they have. But the truth is that what matters to us most, we do.
My first piano teacher told me that, he said, if you want to get something done, find the busiest person.
Because they know how to manage their time.
Exactly. They know how to get things done. Another set of emails that I thought were very interesting. You talk about how authors get paid. You talk about advances, royalties, and rights.
Right. That's a very vast... Do you have to narrow that down?
Well, let's narrow it down. Basically, how do authors get paid? You don't write a book and you get a check in the mail.
No, not quite that easily. And granted, I'm speaking from the perspective of what's known as traditional publishing. You know, it's probably a lot different for people who've chosen to self-publish. I hear that in cases of Amazon or whatever, like their accounting is done on a monthly basis, and it's just a very different thing. So I'm not speaking, you know, this is the way it is for everyone always. This has just been my experience with traditional publishing. But when you work with a publisher, there are two ways an author gets paid. You get paid through your advance and you get paid through royalties. An advance is the money that the publisher pays for the rights of your book, whatever rights they are purchasing, whether it's world rights or it's specific, and it's all laid out in the contract. The advance that they pay the author is the author's to keep regardless. As long as the author delivers that book and, you know, everything is okay, then it's the author's to keep regardless, excuse me, of whether they sell one copy or a million copies. But the advance actually means advance of royalties. So they're fronting you the money, basically, based on what they think they're going to sell the book for. In other words, how many copies they think, and they run numbers and there's spreadsheets, and they could be way off by a lot, overshot, undershot. They don't know. It's always a gamble for them. But they, if you're writing genre fiction, they sort of have an idea of what other books in that specific range have sold, and they'll offer you money based on what they think they're going to sell it for. So as far as royalties are concerned, an author will never see another dime for that piece of work unless he or she has sold enough copies of their book based on the royalty structure that's outlined in the contract to earn back all of that money that he's already been paid. That, in industry parlance, is called earning out. And when a book has earned out, then you start to see the royalties and so on and so forth. And in traditional publishing, the accounting is done twice a year. So I like to refer to publishing as the ultimate in trickle-down economics, because it takes so long before you actually ever see any money. And so an advance for a book, contrary to popular opinion, is not paid out in one lump sum. Depending on the publisher, some publishers have a 3-tier way of doing it, others 4. There might even be publishers out there that do 5. I don't know if there are bonuses and whatever, however the contract is structured. But the advance is usually, in my case, paid out in 4 portions. So I will get a quarter of the advance when I sign the contract, and a quarter of the advance when I deliver the book and it's accepted. And that's a very important part. Accepted, that means that the editor has gone over it with you and you've finally reached a point where you're both happy with it. You can't just say, okay, here's your book, give me my money. So when the book is accepted, there's another quarter. When the book is published, that's another quarter. And a year after the book is published, that's another quarter. So based on the time schedule for a particular book, it could be a 2-year period from the time that you get your first payment on an advance to where you get the last one. So if you get a $25,000 advance on a book, or just for the sake of simplicity here, let's say a $40,000 advance on a book, which is quite high, actually, for genre fiction, you might possibly see $20,000 in a year. So it's not a get-rich-quick or even a get-rich way of earning a living. It's a consistent, at your desk every day, slogging it out, gradually building your audience and growing it so that the next advance is a little bigger than the one before. And it's a lot of work. It's a business. It's not just a creative endeavor.
Well, I know you've had ups and downs and ups. You made one of the New York Times lists, bestseller lists. And then I noticed it wasn't on there, which is true of most books, and it wasn't on there for a while. Is that difficult to see the ups and downs of publishing?
The Informationist debuted onto the New York Times bestseller list. So the very first week it was out, it was on there. And I think it was on there for 3 weeks or something like that, which was a really, really big deal. And I didn't at the time understand how big of a deal it was, because I was just so clueless of everything that was going on. And, you know, now that I look back at it, I'm like, oh, my God, that was amazing. But it's so fluky, stuff like that, because, you know, whether a book makes it onto the New York Times bestseller list totally depends on what else is coming out at the same time. And if you are so unfortunate to be having a book out when 50 Shades of Grey volumes 1, 2, and 3 are being reprinted, and Game of Thrones has a new book out, and, you know, J.K. Rowling's adult novel comes out all the same time or something, you could sell 100,000 copies of your book and never show up on the New York Times bestseller list. It's just so relative. So a lot of those things, because you have no control over them, and really, truly, authors have so little control over anything that happens in the publishing. The only thing they have any control over is the words on the page. Everything from what font is used to the cover of the book to sometimes even the words that are put on the back of the book. People assume that the author has some say in this. They don't. And if the publisher really likes you, they'll consult with you, but they don't have to. You don't get veto power or anything like that. So there's so little that the author actually controls that you learn to just take it with a shrug. It's like, okay, great, something good happened. Oh, oops, there was nothing I could do about that. And you just write your heart out and do your best to write a really good book, because in the end, the only thing that ever really truly sells a book is word of mouth. A person liking the book, telling their friends to read it, and so on and so forth, that's what makes a bestseller. And so the only thing you can control as an author is the quality of that book, and you just throw your heart into it.
I know it has to be a lonely existence when you're just pounding out the verbiage, but you also, you have to do marketing. You have to go on tour and whatnot. Is it... I would think that's an interesting mix. You're both alone and meeting people.
I think for some authors it's really, really hard. I've never done any surveys to, you know, get any official idea of what it's like. But I find myself quite fortunate because I am, at my heart and soul, a true introvert. I love being alone. I love being alone. And yet I love people. I love people, and I really truly enjoy socializing. It's just very exhausting for me. So it, for me, it's a perfect balance to be able to sit alone for months on end and then be out and be among my readers and have so much fun being able to interact with them and then go away again and be quiet for a few months. And I know that it's not like that for everyone, but for me, I feel very blessed because it really suits my personality and my temperament.
Well, congratulations on the second book coming out in paperback, and we will await more. Congratulations on the new contracts. Good to see you, and just wish you the best of success.
Thank you. And before we go, I just want to invite all of your listeners, if there's anyone who has heard anything about these business aspects of writing or would like to join me on my journey, I just put it out there that anybody's welcome. It doesn't cost anything. If you don't like what you're reading, you can always get off my list. But my website is www.taylorstevensbooks.com, and there's a connect with me button right
Stevens
on there.
Stevens with a V.
Stevens with a V. You have to put the Taylor Stevens Books, because if you just do the Taylor Stevens, you're going to pull up some very not safe for work stuff.
I have done that too. Not safe for children or whatever. But,
yes.
But your site is.
My site is. Yes. Very safe. Yeah. TaylorStevensBooks.com, and there's a connect with me button on the very front page.
Taylor, thanks so much.
You're welcome.